Hey everybody, this is Lex Rofberg, and we're giving a little bit of a preamble before this episode as one of our High Holiday episodes. Initially, it was released in 2016/5777, right at the beginning of 5777, as we entered that new year. But we're re-releasing it this year because we think that these conversations about the Torah readings and Haftorah readings from the High Holidays are still relevant. And we didn't re-record new ones. We, as much as our ideas changed, they haven't changed so much that we have whole new takes on these texts. But we wanted to put them out there for you anyway, to, if you listened the first time, revisit, and if you didn't, to visit for the first time. So we hope you enjoy these, and send us whatever feedback you've got at dan@judaismunbound.com or lex@judaismunbound.com. Shana Tova, Happy New Year.
This is a special edition of Judaism Unbound, the High Holiday Readings. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Levinson.
And I'm Lex Rofus.
And we're here with a special edition of Judaism Unbound today that actually is putting together a number of shorter pieces that you can find on our website, www.judaismunbound.com, in our special section on the High Holidays. We're going to be talking about each of the traditional readings for the High Holidays and looking at them with a Judaism Unbound perspective to try to find a way to see whether these traditional readings can still be relevant to us today as we potentially look at these holidays in a new way. So our next text is the Torah reading for the second day of Rosh Hashanah, which is the well-known story of the binding of Isaac. And I guess the basics here are really the next story after Isaac's birth and the kicking out of Ishmael is this very strange story where God is said to have be testing Abraham, and God comes and tells Abraham that Abraham should sacrifice his only son, whom he loves so much, and Abraham agrees and takes Isaac to the mountain and gets him all ready to be sacrificed. And at the last minute, God, or a messenger of God, comes and tells Abraham, "Don't do it." In fact, there's a ram caught in the thicket, and you should sacrifice the ram instead. So here's a couple of takes on it, just to get us started. And this is not to say that any of the other takes and traditional ideas that have been talked about for so many years are not continuing to be relevant. But I'm just trying to think, like, can we make this even more relevant and interesting in a new way that maybe hasn't been talked about that much for ourselves thinking forward into what Judaism could become? And so the first point that I want to make is really just very, very much tied to the point that we discussed in terms of the reading for the first day of Rosh Hashanah, which is to see this as a terrible decision by Abraham, a terrible decision by God, and that in the story, God actually realizes it at the last minute and changes God's mind. And Abraham, though, doesn't seem to ever realize it. So number one is that I, again, want to get into this idea, like, what if we read it that way, right? What if we read this as an absolutely terrible thing that was done by God and by Abraham, and really the only person redeemed, or the only character redeemed here is God, because God, at the last minute, realizes this is wrong. That's sort of point number one. Point number two is really something that is related to that, and maybe a meatier piece to get into. And I remember thinking about this the first time when Barack Obama was elected as president and his children were very young. And I remember thinking, oh, I feel so sorry for those children, because they are going to, right, their childhood has been completely changed. Now, you could, of course, say there are good things about it, too. But I was focused, maybe because of having little children myself, you know, I was focused on sort of the negative part of it, and the part where a lot of their sort of innocent childhood would be different and taken away. And why was that happening to them? You know, because of their father's job. And that really put me in the mind, I think it was around Rosh Hashanah when the election was coming up, right? You know, 8 years ago. And I was thinking about what would happen if Barack Obama won. And it got me thinking about this idea that, could we see this story as a metaphor about work-life balance? That what's really going on here is that Abraham's boss, God, is demanding of him a certain kind of work performance that, in this story, because it involves the killing of his son, is literally the worst kind of work-life balance that you could possibly imagine, which is that you will literally kill your family in order to do your job. But metaphorically, it really strikes me that this is the kind of balancing act that we all perform all the time in terms of thinking about work-life balance, and that if we look at it, and it's one of those cases that I feel like if we read the text too literally, and we read this as a text about sacrificing a child, of course we're all horrified by that, and that is a horrible thing to even contemplate, and we could sort of end the discussion right there. But if we're able to just look at it metaphorically and ask ourselves, you know, how often do we sacrifice our children in one way or another? And to what extent are we making our children and our families pay the price for the decisions that we have made about what's important to us outside of the family in terms of career or even really positive things like wanting to make a difference in the world? And, you know, how many great world leaders have had terrible family lives? And so the question that at least this particular text puts me in the mind of every year in the High Holidays since that time is to take some reflection on the question about whether I am achieving a good enough work-life balance. And I think that largely my conclusion is no, that I find myself wanting. And that's the point of these kinds of holidays, is to really focus and to say, okay, so, you know, yeah, I'm not actually sacrificing my children on a literal altar, but I don't think I'm doing well enough there. And this kind of always gets me thinking about it in a kind of dramatic way.
Well, I guess that's a good opening for me in the spirit of the season to say that any times that I've gotten in the way of your, since I am the work part of the equation or part of your work equation, anything that I've done to negatively affect your work-life balance, I sincerely ask your forgiveness for. So hopefully we can together work on that. I agree with you on that metaphor for this story. I had another take as well, which is related to the way that the story concludes. So much of the drama here is about, rightfully, the almost sacrifice of Isaac. By the way, for those interested, there are scholars out there who think the initial story actually had Isaac sacrificed, and then it was a later shift for Isaac to be saved and the ram sacrificed instead. So for those who want to read more, definitely encourage it. But the story doesn't end, or this chapter 22, doesn't end with the ram being sacrificed instead of Isaac. It continues on, and it says, Abraham, it being the angel says, hey, Abraham, because you were willing to sacrifice your son, your descendants are going to be as many as the stars in the sky, as the sands on the seashore, etc. And then it starts to list off some of the future generations that will lead into Rebecca and Isaac's story next chapter. And I think that that's really important to note, because it's almost as if the victory of this story isn't merely that a child, that Isaac is saved. It's that, you know, our numbers increased. And I think that that's a really dangerous and tricky message to wrestle with. And we've talked about that in some of the early episodes of the show, including ours with Barack Richmond. But both then, clearly, and now, so much of our Jewishness is encapsulated by questions of continuing and our literal existence, just having future generations exist, which is, of course, something that we're all conscious of and thinking about. But what I found interesting in this story is that there's actually two different accounts. So one, merely the angel comes, ram is given instead of Isaac, and that's the narrative. Then we see that the angel comes a second time, which is often a hint that this might be a different source when we look at source criticism. And it says, okay, not only that, but you're going to be a great nation. Here's the list of all your future generations. And what that suggests to me is that there's two different ways that we could take this. One is to focus on the numbers game and how this is primarily a good story because, look, we saved Isaac, and Isaac led to the rest of us. Pretty important. The other is that this was just a moment where a life was spared and where, thank goodness, a positive result occurred. I think Dan's totally right that the fact Abraham was willing to do this is not a positive result. reflection on him. It's a very negative reflection on him. And we can thank the character of God in this story for redeeming it in the sense that we didn't have child sacrifice on our hands. We only have the issue of almost child sacrifice on our hands, which is quite enough to think about this high holiday season, I think.
I just wanted to add that I think when we were talking about this earlier, I think that you were saying something that I found really intriguing, which was that the Hebrew for a great nation is goy gadol. Gadol is large. And it can be understood, though, as large or great, both in terms of numbers and also in terms of, I would say, like, impact, right? And and clearly in the text of the story, they also seem to be going in the numbers direction. You know, your descendants will be as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sands in the sea, et cetera. But I really think that maybe it would be of interest to sort of reclaim the idea of a great nation as greatness in terms of impact. And it seems quite clear that Judaism has been a great nation in that regard. And it would be interesting to think about what it would look like if we focused our motivations, focused our attention on being a great nation in the future in terms of our continued important impact on the world rather than retaining our numbers or even increasing our numbers. My hypothesis would be that if we refocused ourselves in that way, our numbers would grow because people would want to be part of such a nation that was so focused on having a positive impact, and that a nation focused on just having numbers is not a very attractive nation to want to join. And, you know, it sort of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, it's like Stephen Covey famously talks about, with people, fast is slow and slow is fast. You know, it's a sort of like paradox that with people, the fastest way you can get somewhere is to work slowly as people need to work. And similarly, I feel like there's this paradox that if you try to get numbers, you will not get numbers. And if you try to get impact, you will get numbers, you know, and maybe that also ties to some of those rabbinic aphorisms like he who chases honor will run away from him, and he who runs away from honor will pursue him.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. So maybe it's that if we are great, then we'll be great. First great referring to our actions, our impact, and second great referring to numbers.
Amen.
So on that note, we're going to wrap up this look into the second day Rosh Hashanah Torah reading. We encourage you to check out our other Rosh Hashanah special edition episodes of Judaism Unbound, and you can get those in iTunes or Google Play, wherever you generally get our podcast, or you can do so on our website, judaismunbound.com, under our High Holidays Unbound project section in the Listen and Learn track. So thanks for listening. We encourage you to check out our other ones. Stay tuned for some Yom Kippur episodes to come up in the near future. And with that, this has been Judaism Unbound.